Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here on WILL AM 580 in Urbana, Illinois, coming from live from Campbell Hall today. In a timely show, indeed, today, as the liberation or occupation of Iraq now enters what appears to be a long, drawn-out process with no clear end in sight, and attention turns to exactly what the reasons were for this war in the first place that were given. What was the motivation behind the reasoning? How accurate was it? And how much of it was just flat out a bunch of lies? Today, joining us, appropriately enough, are the authors of a new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, just published recently by Penguin Books. And those our guests are John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton. John Stauber is an investigative writer, public speaker, and activist who co-founded the Center for Media and Democracy 10 years ago. He has written several books with our other guest, Sheldon Rampton, who is the editor of PR Watch, which is the publication of the Center for Media and Democracy. And those books include Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Mad Cow USA, and most recently, Trust Us, We're Experts, How Industry Manipulates Science and Gambles with Your Future, which came out 2 years ago. John Stauber has been a guest on our show in the past, and we're delighted to have both John and Sheldon with us today. Guys, are you there? John? Sheldon, are you there? Okay, we've got them on the line, but we're going to have to do a little technical work to hook them in. They can hear us, apparently, but now we're working on getting their talk in. Let me tell you a little bit more about John and Sheldon while we get them on. I've known them for a good 10 years each because I used to live in Madison, Wisconsin. And their first book, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry, which came out in 1995, is considered one of the a real standard text of the history and nature of the public relations industry in the United States. Their second book, Mad Cow USA, Could the Nightmare Happen Here, came out in 1997. And Mad Cow USA is a book that really was years ahead of its time in anticipating the problems with the beef supply that come with some of the recent practices in agriculture and food husbandry. And then their most recent book that I was talking about until the new one, Trust Us, We're Experts, How Industry Manipulates Science and Gambles with Your Future, is an extraordinary book, and it's probably their best-selling and best-known book, that talks about how so-called experts are abused and misused by special interests to sort of doctor information to represent commercial values ahead of the public interest, and how our news, accordingly, is not always very accurate or very faithful to the truth. Their new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, is one of these books that was seemingly rushed out because it literally was published only a few weeks after it was finally completed, but reflects really a year or so of intense labor on their part and chronicles the history of the Bush administration's relations with Iraq and its campaign to have a war with Iraq, which goes back really to before the Bush administration took office, but certainly as long as the Bush administration has been in office. And we are working to get our guests, John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton, on the air with us. They're apparently going to be joining us momentarily. Guys, you there now? Not quite yet, but our crack engineering team is... Yes, I think we've got a connection. John, are you there?
I am.
Wonderful. Sheldon?
I'm here.
Wait, we've got both John and Sheldon here. I just gave the longest introduction in the history of Media Matters for two guests.
Well, maybe we should just let you keep going, Bob. You were probably on a roll.
Yeah, it's up to your fifth grade high school reunion, John.
Can you tell me what you said?
No, that's unfortunately you're going to have to listen to the show later off the internet. It's great to have John and Sheldon on there. We have been giving a lot of background about your other books and about Weapons of Mass Deception. And let's get right into the book because it's so timely. I don't think I've ever had a book that has really hit a pressing issue so directly and been so current and up-to-date. I mean, when did you finish writing this book?
I guess it's been, what, John, 2 months ago now?
It was wrapped up in May. The book was actually written, Bob, in, I think, a record 6 weeks.
Record for us, that is.
A record for us. But frankly, it's certainly as good as the rest of our books. And as you say, extremely timely. It's intensely documented. There's a page of footnotes for every 4 pages of text. And it's been getting just tremendous reviews in the less than a week it's been out, at least in the United Kingdom and Australia, where it's also been published. It's selling well in stores. It's been most of the last week in the Amazon.com top 100. But we're sort of shocked that here in the United States, the major media has stayed away from this like a hot potato.
Well, not exactly. One major medium, Media Matters show on WILL, is jumping right on top of it, right on top of the book. Why don't we get to the heart of the book? What is your core argument in the book, Weapons of Mass Deception?
The core argument is that the case for war with Iraq was introduced to the public in September of last year, long after the Bush administration had already decided it was going to war, which they decided at the very latest in February of last year, and probably sooner. But the arguments that were made to sell the war were threefold. One, that Iraq possesses ominous weapons of mass destruction. Two, that Iraq was connected to al-Qaeda and was in some way responsible for the terror attacks of September 11. And three, that the people of Iraq will greet a U.S. invasion as an act of liberation and will welcome the soldiers. One of the people enlisted in the campaign to support the war for the White House actually said that there wouldn't be enough flowers in Iraq mm-hmm. to throw it at the soldiers to welcome them. All three of those claims are based on very selective interpretation of evidence and in many cases outright lies that oversold the war and have now gotten us into a lot of trouble, because rather than being welcomed with open arms, we can see what's really happening, and what's really happening is what they used to call a quagmire back in the Vietnam days, in which you have 150,000 soldiers surrounded by a hostile population of 25 million people. And this is a real mess. And the way we got into that mess is because we were sold a war on false pretenses.
So that was Sheldon Rampton speaking. John Stauber, so if the campaign is going to prove ultimately to be unsuccessful because the war isn't true to the alleged reasons for it, the propaganda campaign, the PR campaign of the Bush administration to get popular support for the war until now has been successful. Is that what you argue in the book?
Well, we demonstrate in the book that the propaganda campaign that misled the American people into supporting this war was, as we can all see, unfortunately, terribly successful. And I think one of the reasons why ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, and Fox have so far neglected to have us on their programs with the rest of their intelligent talking heads like Ann Coulter is because this war could have never been foisted upon the American public if the news media had done its job, which is to challenge and question and raise issues in a democracy, especially about arguably the most important decision ever made by any government, whether or not to launch a war, especially a preemptive attack against a country that has not attacked us. Instead of democratic discussion and debate and investigation, the news media really became the propaganda arm for the administration, and these deceptions that Sheldon pointed out about weapons of mass destruction, about Iraq having any connections to al-Qaeda and 9/11, were, rather than challenged by the news media, repeated over and over and over with almost no countervailing criticism.
We're talking to Sheldon Rampton and John Stauber, whose voice you just heard today in Media Matters. They're the authors of the new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, which just came out, published by Penguin. Is that right, guys?
Correct. The Tarcher Penguin.
The Tarcher Penguin House. And if you'd like to call in and speak with John or Sheldon, ask them a question about the book and the war in Iraq. The number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Now, one of the things that comes out in the book that I've seen elsewhere but I think is still quite extraordinary, John and Sheldon, is the polls of public opinion about sort of belief of the various claims that the Bush administration made to justify the war. in terms of whether Iraq was connected to Al-Qaeda, the 9/11 events, weapons of mass destruction. Can you talk a little bit about that, Sheldon?
Yeah, well, one of the, there were actually a couple of opinion polls that were done showing that in the months leading up to the onset of war, 66% of the American people actually believed that Iraq had had something directly to do with September 11. A majority also believed that Iraq either possessed nuclear weapons or was on the verge of possessing them. Now, if those claims were true, of course, that would be a fairly persuasive case for war. You know, if I believed that Iraq had been behind September 11 and that it possessed nuclear weapons, I would be strongly driven to support this war, too. But neither of those claims had any basis in fact, and that, of course, is becoming increasingly obvious. But one of the ways they created that impression in people's minds, it's very interesting the way they did it with regard to the alleged link to Al-Qaeda, for example, because the Bush administration was actually fairly careful not to outright say that Iraq was behind September 11. What they did instead was they constantly made a point of mentioning Al-Qaeda in the same breath, in the same sentence, every time they mentioned Iraq, and just hinting broadly. They went further than that by talking about one case in particular that has gotten a fair amount of attention and speculation. That's the case of Mohammed Atta, who was one of the hijackers on September 11 who flew one of the planes. And Atta, according to a story that began circulating shortly after the towers fell, the story was that he had met with an Iraqi official in Prague in the Czech Republic a few months before the attack. And this is a story that came from an informant in Prague who had seen Atta's photograph on the paper after the attack, or on television after the attack, and thought there was a resemblance to someone he'd seen, so he reported it to the authorities there. But that's all. That was the only basis for it, and it was investigated by multiple people, including the FBI, which logged thousands of man hours tracking Mohammed Atta's movements and found that he was in the United States the entire period when this person thought he might have been in Prague. Václav Havel, the president of the Czech Republic, investigated this story and concluded that there was no basis to it. It turns out that Iraqi official in Prague had some dealings with a car salesman who bears a rather striking resemblance to Mohammed Atta, and that's probably the basis of the rumor. Nevertheless, this story about Mohammed Atta meeting with an Iraqi official in Prague was repeated over and over again by top Bush administration officials such as Dick Cheney and other people close to the administration, such as Richard Perle or Wolfowitz.
Mm-hmm.
The way they would typically do it is they would hint broadly. If they were asked any questions about whether the story was true or not, they would say, well, now that gets us into classified areas and we can't discuss that. So what they did is they left the impression in people's minds that there was something there.
And of course,
go ahead, John Stauber.
Yeah, and of course, all this was occurring in this massive media echo chamber that was typified and taken to the extreme by the Fox TV News Network. Very interesting to note that the Fox Network, owned by billionaire right-wing media mogul Rupert Murdoch, and headed up by former Republican political attack dog consultant Roger Ailes, became the number one source for news for people watching this war on television. And, of course, from the very beginning, that network, dominated by ideologues posing as journalists like Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, would take any insinuation that the administration put out about weapons of mass destruction, about Iraq connections to terrorism, about Iraq connections to Al-Qaeda, all this information that has turned out to be false and misleading, they would air it as if it were breaking news. And that's why people in the United States are so, let's use the term, ignorant and confused about the facts of the matter, because they tuned into Fox And on Fox, there were weapons of mass destruction discovered. Fox did report that there were solid ties between the attacks of 9/11 and the Saddam Hussein regime. So really, that's why I mentioned earlier that this war would have been impossible, this massive propaganda deception impossible, if not for the major media serving as the delivery vehicle for the propaganda.
We're talking to John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton, the co-authors of the new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, which has just come out in Tarcher Penguin, available in fine bookstores and now ranking as a bestseller, apparently, in the top 100 of the Amazon list. So go look for it. I've already seen it and read it. I have two copies, I might add. And I urge people interested in this issue to read the book. If you'd like to call in and ask Rampton and Stauber a question, the number here, 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. And let's go to the phone lines now. Line 4, Dixon, Illinois, you're on with Rampton and Stauber.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I was hoping you would touch on what's happening in Iraq now with the censorship of the Iraqi media and the attacks on Al Jazeera and just the general how do you get news out of Iraq and find out what's going on now. Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, thank you. Guys, do you know much about that?
Well, let me say, let me put in a plug here for our website, prwatch.org. One reason that Sheldon and I, with the help of Laura Miller in our office, were able to pull together this book in 6 weeks is that ever since 9/11, we've been reporting on these issues daily on our website and on our weekly listserv. So you can go to our website and search for words like media, Iraq, and you'll kick out stories. But Sheldon, do you have a response to that question?
Well, you know, it is interesting that there is, in fact, censorship being imposed by the U.S. authorities in Iraq. Remember, I mean, they came to power, or they toppled Saddam Hussein and announced that they were going to institute democracy, and instead they've been firing on crowds of demonstrators, which have been large crowds of demonstrators, and they've been saying that local clergy could get in trouble if they incite people against the U.S. occupation, and they've actively been censoring the media there. So now that doesn't mean that there's no information coming out of there. There was information coming out of Iraq that was fairly independent even when Saddam Hussein was ruling the place. And we, one of the things we do on our website is when we come across an interesting news source, we list it. For example, there's a periodic publication. I forget the name of it now, but we put up a link to it just a week or so ago. It was started by some British up-and-coming young journalists who thought, this is the place we want to be to report from. So they started up a Baghdad-based news magazine that has some pretty interesting reporting from a variety of perspectives about what's going on there. So there, it is possible to get information about what's going on in Iraq. And, of course, one of the other good sources of information is from the U.S. troops themselves, who are expressing a range of viewpoints about the conditions they're facing. And so there's information trickling in from all sorts of sources about what's happening in Iraq. The information that's mostly being channeled and massaged and manipulated in the United States, again, is the information in the broadcast media where it tends to be rather tamed and controlled.
Yeah, it's funny. Interesting that just a week ago, the front page of the Financial Times, the British newspaper, the equivalent of the Wall Street Journal of England, had on its front page, above the fold, a headline about Senator Bob Graham of Florida saying that it might be time to impeach Bush for lying about the reasons getting us into the war. Yet I didn't see that story prominently played in any U.S. media. And this is one of the ranking Democrat on the Foreign Relations Committee in the U.S. Senate.
And not exactly somebody with a big reputation for liberalism.
No, not exactly. So it was quite striking that the British and our allies, this would be a front page story there. about an American politician, but not in the United States. Our guests today, John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton, the co-authors of the new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq. I'm your host of Media Matters, Bob McChesney. We have lines open. The number here, 333-9455, and the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Line 1, Champagne, you're on with Rampton and Stauber.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
2 points that come to mind, one concerning the propaganda issue, which is, as you've been stating all along, is the control of the media and what information does leak out. And I think perhaps the most frightening thing that I found is that the current administration seems to have such overwhelming control of what is said in our own media, and such that what I have heard being bandied about is that White House media and other media are so afraid of being blocked out of any information at all that they're willing to have some control, be controlled by what the administration wants them to say rather than being, quotes, locked out. I think, and again, this is purely my opinion, concerning the possible impeachment thoughts of Senator Graham, that, in my opinion, as far as an impeachable offense of sexual misconduct by our commander-in-chief, that it's a far less heinous thing to perform than killing hundreds of thousands of people. That's an opinion. My other question, which does not speak entirely to propaganda, but perhaps you could speak to, is why is it that our Congress is only now asking, after the fact, the questions they should have been asking before going to war?
Well, this is John Stauber. I'll take a crack at that.
Okie dokie.
First of all, on the comments that the caller made, there's an excellent book that came out back during the Reagan regime, and of course many of these individuals who are in control of the administration now came out of the Reagan regime. The book is titled On Bended Knee by Mark Hertzgard. It was a bestseller at the time, and it told the story of the fantastic control that the Reagan administration exercised over the White House press corps. I would agree with the caller. I've had reporters in Washington tell me this, too, that, yes, the Bush control is masterful. He scripts the few news conferences he calls. He prepares the questions in advance. He calls on favorite reporters. He doesn't do follow-ups. And the media has just degraded so much that, you know, for the individual reporters and their networks, they want FaceTime. They want to be seen actually asking the president a question. So the White House press conferences have really degraded into just a real PR charade. Now, in terms of the Congress, I think it's very interesting to look back and see how do we get into this situation where the White House, the Republican Party, which controls the White House, also controls both houses of Congress. And as we mentioned briefly in our book, and you can find a lot more documentation of this, the Republican strategists, under the direction of brilliant men like Karl Rove, used the build-up to war to put the Democrats on the defensive. And if you remember back a year ago as the congressional elections were approaching, the Democrats were just saying, look, just let us vote for this war and get it out of the way so we can have a debate before the election on something else. Well, the Democrats took the bait. They supported this war. We saw Democrats like Senator Feinstein, for instance, from California, many others, who you would expect to have voted against giving President Bush the green light for war, voting for it. And they lost the election, I think, because of it, because the White House had made the war the number one issue.
and whether or not you supported the war, the number one test. And unfortunately, because of that, I don't think talks of impeaching this president or even getting an honest investigation are really fruitful. We're going to need a massive movement of outraged citizens to really get to the bottom of this. And the first demand is that the news media do what we've been trying to do, expose the deception.
We're talking to John Stauber, who you just heard, and Sheldon Rampton, who are our guests today. They're the authors of Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq. I'm Bob McChesney, the host of Media Matters. We've got a full bank of phones here. All the lines are busy. We're going to get to all of you callers. If you're on those lines, please hold. I guarantee we'll get you as soon as possible. Right now, let's go to line two, Urbana. You're on the air with Rampton and Stauber.
Yes. My question is that I heard or read or learned some time ago that Bush and his administration were ready to go to war, to wage war on Iraq before 9/11. And 9/11 just gave them a great excuse. Would you comment on that?
Well, this is Sheldon Rampton. There are any number of reasons to believe that's exactly the case. First of all, there is a group called the Project for the New American Century, which whose members consist of many of the people who are either in the Bush administration, such as Dick Cheney, or who are very close to the Bush administration, such as Richard Perle. They put out a report several years before Bush was even elected in which they advocated going to war with Iraq. They're the ones who coined that phrase, regime change. And so they wanted to do it even before Bush was elected, let alone before September 11. But immediately after September 11, Bush pulled together his top advisors, and among the things he told them is to view this as an opportunity. Well, what does that mean? And what Rumsfeld said, who's also, by the way, a member of the Project for the New American Century, what he said is let's sweep up all the things we want to do in one basket and do them all, whether they're related to September 11 or not. So, and you have immediately after September 11, of course, you have statements where Bush is on the record himself as early as February saying, we're going to take out Saddam Hussein. We've already decided. They didn't tell the American public about that, though. It wasn't on the discussion table for debate or anything until September of last year when they did what they called a product launch. That was the phrase they used. And Andrew Card, the White House chief of staff, was interviewed by a reporter in September and asked, well, why are you bringing this out now? And his response is, well, from a marketing point of view, you don't introduce new product in August.
Unless, of course, the new product is the book Weapons of Mass Deception by my guests Sheldon Rampton and Stan Stauber. You just heard Sheldon Rampton here on Media Matters WILL 580. We've got a few callers I want to get to. We do have a line open at 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the toll-free line now. San Francisco, you're our first Californian to call Media Matters. Welcome.
Oh, the first one in history or the first one today?
First one in history. We're only a year old, so we're a young history.
Well, I'm here in San Francisco. In fact, I'm in the Haight-Ashbury, which sounds pretty appropriate. In fact, I'm old enough to remember back in that now half-forgotten war. I'm talking about the Vietnam War. The growing role of the underground press. And I believe that the Internet now is playing that kind of role and getting around. I like doing what I call reading between the lines of the New York Times and getting a lot of help from the Internet. And you mentioned that Baghdad, mentioned that Baghdad website. That's really interesting, but I missed it. And could you talk a bit about the role? Do you have links on your website to other webs and web blogs and so on that are doing just that?
Yes, we do. We have a section on our website called Spin of the Day. And if you go there, we put one or two items up there every day with links. And it's not just stuff about Iraq and the war. John and I write about propaganda and the public relations industry from a variety of angles. So, you know, PR for the restaurant industry, stuff like that's up there too.
Hey, Sheldon, repeat the web address for the website, would you please?
Sure. Our website is prwatch.org. That's PR as in propaganda, prwatch.org, and if you go there, look for the Spin of the Day link and click on that, and we have links there to news stories, to other websites, and that's where if you look in the July entries under the Spin of the Day section, you'll find that reference to the Baghdad publication that I was talking about previously.
And are people beginning to use the internet to discuss? I call reading between the lines of the New York Times. To share information, because it's obvious to me that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and we can do more together than any of us can do on our own. Casting a wide net, finding the common thread, letting a life flourish, and saying, "Don't panic, let's just keep it."
Thank you very much, caller.
That's very definitely happening. And one of the examples, in fact, we begin Weapons of Mass Deception, the introduction, we begin by talking about the toppling of Saddam Hussein's statue in Firdaus Square, which on April 9, which was broadcast throughout the United States over and over again that day as proof that the Iraqi people were indeed celebrating and welcoming U.S. troops, and it was compared in the media in the United States to the fall of the Berlin Wall or to the toppling of Lenin's statue with the fall of the Soviet Union or, you know, that kind of momentous event. Well, it was less than 24 hours before information started circulating on the Internet. One of the things they circulated was a Reuters photograph of the event when they toppled Saddam Hussein's statue, but it was a long-shot photo. And if you look at it, you realize that it's actually a very small crowd in the center of Firdaus Square that's involved in this ceremony of toppling Saddam Hussein's statue. About 200 people inside a large square, and moreover, the square is ringed with U.S. tanks. So that photograph, which was a Reuters photograph, and could have been the picture that appeared in the major news media as their picture depicting the events of the day. It didn't get included in any news stories, but it did circulate widely over the internet, and as a result, you can get a more accurate picture of what really happened on that day.
Yeah, it's funny, Sheldon. This is Bob McChesney. When I was when that day happened and that was on the news, I happened to be at Harvard talking to some people. And a very prominent Harvard professor, we were watching the news that morning as that was being shown, I think really for the first time or second time, and they've shown all day long. And he said to me, you know, I was against this war, but boy, now that I see this sort of upsurge of popular enthusiasm for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, you know, I think maybe we were right. Maybe this was really a good war. I mean, it was striking to me how effective it was.
Well, this is John. Absolutely, it was effective. I was in front of a TV set flipping among the various networks, and I think it was an entire 2 hours that the cameras just focused on the scene, and not once did any of those cameras draw back and show the wide angle that revealed this to be what I call a staged media event. It was a phony event. We suspect that it was probably organized by the CIA and Pentagon's crack PR team, the Rendon Group, because John Rendon, who's received millions and millions of dollars over the last decade to organize media events like this and do other work for the Pentagon and CIA in the campaign against Iraq, specializes in just this sort of thing. We quote him in the book giving a speech some years ago talking about his work during the first Gulf War, and he asked his audience, did you ever stop to wonder how, when the American troops finally rolled into Kuwait City after 7 months of occupation, they were greeted by throngs of Kuwaiti citizens with little American flags waving to greet them? Well, I'm the guy who got them the flags. That's what I do. I'm an information warrior. I'm a perception manager. If Sheldon and I were the special prosecutors in charge of the investigation that needs to be held and may never be held of this massive deception, the first thing we would do is put under oath people like John Rendon, Tory Clark, and the people who really ran the propaganda campaign. And those are the files, I think, that would really reveal to the American people the extent to which we were all hoodwinked.
We're talking to John Stauber, you just heard, and Sheldon Rampton. They're the co-authors of the brand new book, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, just published by Tarcher Penguin, available at fine bookstores, and doing phenomenal businesses. It's well-deserved. It's an outstanding book, and people interested in this issue, I urge you to take a look at it. We've got a full bank of calls, and we're going to get to all the callers now. Line three on the cell phone. I hope we haven't worn down your battery while you've been waiting.
No, I'm fine.
All right, well, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I'm not generally given to sort of a bleak perspective, but it does seem like the straight media completely ignored the facts that the piece with it was putting out before the war, facts that they're obsessed with now, sort of, you know, every detail about whether or not the president's speech was accurate and these sort of things. And these are things that were widely available. These weren't hidden facts. And it just seems like as hard as we tried, I wrote letters to my congressmen and senators, and I know lots of people who did the same. We had zilch impact on the national media before the run-up to war. And I, like I said, I'm not given to a bleak perspective, but I'd like your guests to comment on that. Thanks so much.
Certainly. Gentlemen?
This is Sheldon. I would say that, first of all, you know, all the hoopla we've seen over the past few weeks about those 16 words in Bush's State of the Union speech, in which he flat out lied. I mean, you can dance around that if you want, but that's what he did. He claimed that Iraq was trying to import uranium from Niger on the basis of documents that everyone knew at the time were forgeries. There's been a great big discussion about those 16 words, but the hidden spin in that is the idea that those 16 words are the only thing he did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're not discussing all of the other things that Bush and his administration said in the months leading up to war to sell the war. And the impression that I think this is leaving with people is that this is a big tempest in a teapot about one sentence in his State of the Union speech. And so even though there has been some debate about it, it's been a very carefully modulated debate. And it's in some ways it bears the quality of an orchestrated debate, because first the questions went up about those 16 words in Bush's speech, and then different people stepped forward one after another to take responsibility for it. You know, George Tenet, the head of the CIA, said, "Oh, it's my fault." And then, you know, someone else steps forward, and then finally Condoleezza Rice steps forward and says, "No, it's really my fault." And then at the end of it, Bush steps forward magnanimously and says, "Well, I forgive them all, but I take responsibility for my words." So the effect of all of that, at an emotional, subliminal level, is to say, well, they made a little mistake about one sentence in this speech, but Bush has stepped forward to take responsibility for it, and it probably isn't his fault anyway. And so even though we're having a debate, it's a debate that in some ways is rather contrived to make it look like there's really not that much to debate about.
John, do you have anything to add?
Well, the caller mentioned that the media seemed obsessed with the issue now, and all I can say is I wish. What they've been obsessed with was the Bush's campaign, the Bush administration's failure to simply dispatch this immediately by doing what he did the other day and saying, okay, I take the blame, it's my fault. And that was the end of it. As I mentioned, we have, you know, a 250-page book detailing this campaign of deception. It came out simultaneously in Britain, Australia, and the United States. The big mainstream media in Britain and Australia are reviewing the book. They're interviewing us. The mainstream media here have just ignored it, treating it like a hot potato. I think the only way we're going to see the press really pursue this campaign of deception, which some people like Paul Krugman have said is arguably the worst political scandal of our lifetime, is if the millions and millions of people who oppose the war and the millions and millions of people who bought into the lies and supported the war because they believed the president become outraged and mobilize and demand investigations by the press and by public officials.
Okay, we're talking to John Stauber, who you just heard, and Sheldon Rampton, co-authors of Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq. The newly published book by Tarcher Penguin just came out. It's hot off the presses and doing very well. We have a phone line or two open at 333-9455, toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. We have a couple of callers who have been very patient. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line one, Campus, you're on the air.
Yeah, I this last statement that you made about the people being outraged kind of goes to my question. Two questions, actually. One is that you realize, of course, however, that in this system that we're in, people are willing to pay for what they want. And if they want stories that are pleasing to them or that somehow make them feel more powerful, I mean, I fail to see how anything is going to stop that. We're kind of in the same situation as Pravda used to be with the Politburo. And, like, I don't see how that didn't stop until the Soviet Union was destroyed. So I guess my let's make that a comment instead of a question. And my question is something that's been bothering me about this whole Iraqi thing, and I don't know that much about the Middle East, but is that very often the word socialist is attached to Saddam Hussein, and knowing the history of these neocons and how that socialism is like their ultimate sin, and it's why they, for example, go after Social Security. I was curious if you had any take on how the socialist part of his regime has been played down, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm to add on to that, I recall that in sort of the huge campaign that included primarily the link of Saddam Hussein to al-Qaeda and to terrorism to 9/11 and the arguments about weapons of mass destruction, periodically there was a subplot about this guy's, you know, admires Stalin and he's really sympathetic to communism and stuff like that. What was the story there, Sheldon and John?
Should I take it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Sheldon.
Okay. Well, you know, there is a side to Saddam Hussein and his regime that was, in fact, modeled in some ways after the system of the Soviet Union. My take on Saddam Hussein, and I shouldn't pretend to be an expert on the Middle East. We study propaganda, and this is a case study in how that was done. But my take on Saddam Hussein is that he did emulate certain aspects of the socialist system, and I think the caller is right that those aspects of his regime are among the things that offend the conservatives the most. One of the areas where I think there's been a kind of a confusion in the way the media has treated Iraq has been, on the one hand, he's supposedly in cahoots with al-Qaeda and the fundamentalists, and on the other hand, he's this very secular socialist. And the two aren't very easily reconciled. You know, you can't both be a Stalinist, Marxist, atheist, and a believer in Islamic jihad. Of course, Saddam Hussein himself, you know, tried to have it both ways with those things. But I think some of the programs that he had in place in the early years of his regime included things like healthcare programs that that did bear an odor of socialism to them, and I think from the point of view of the free market ideology that animates the neocons in the Bush administration, those things are probably as offensive as gassing the Kurds.
You know, it's interesting to see how the United States created the political career to a large extent of Ahmad Chalabi, who in a month is going to take the helm of this sort of sub-coalition under Bremer that's been put together by the U.S. occupiers. We go into this quite a bit in the book. John Rendon, the CIA Pentagon public relations consultant I mentioned earlier, came up with the name Iraqi National Congress for Chalabi's organization, and Chalabi himself was very much a protege of John Rendon. And one thing that Chalabi has been very much in favor of is privatizing Iraqi oil. So there is a whole vision that the neoconservatives have, and certainly making sure that Iraqi oil is not controlled by the government of Iraq. Whoever's in charge of that government is a big part of what they're doing now in Iraq, and that's why they helped create Ahmad Chalabi and want to see him in charge over there. He's the CIA's man in Iraq.
We're talking to John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton, the co-authors of Weapons of Mass Deception, today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We only have a few minutes left, and we've got a couple callers I want to get to. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question, again, about Ahmad Chalabi. And they also give lots of intelligence. They were also intelligence sources for the CIA and the administration. And I just wonder whether is it being worked on, how much of this wrong information was coming from that group, because Chalabi had had benefits from Saddam's removal. And also I had another question about that some reports I heard about some groups in the terrorist list of America, and they organized some small skirmishes from Iraq to Iranian border with the Iranian patrol, and it's been being downplayed, the administration's desire to get rid of the Iranian regime. And I was wondering how much of this information is true, and is what is the possibility of such a aggressive action in the future. And I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
With regard to the first question about what role Chalabi and the Iraqi National Congress played in providing the intelligence information that led to the Bush administration's case for war, it played a huge role. In fact, there were big fights between the Central Intelligence Agency and people like Donald Rumsfeld, because Rumsfeld was actually preferring to believe in intelligence analysis that he was getting from the Iraqi National Congress over the analysis that was coming from experienced analysts within the CIA. The CIA was saying, you know, these claims that you're making about Iraqi weapons programs, about the way the troops are going to be welcomed into the country, that you, those things that you're getting from Chalabi just aren't true, and you're going to make a mistake. And you know, one of the subtexts to this whole war, it's an old story in propaganda, is that propagandists often end up believing their own propaganda to the point that they make mistakes. And I think that's one of the things that happened here. They believed their own PR front group, the Iraqi National Congress, over more sober, dispassionate analysis. And they got themselves into this mess by believing their own propaganda. As for the other part about guerrilla attacks on Iran, I haven't seen those reports. It wouldn't surprise me. One of the things we do in our book, we quote a woman by the name of Eliana Benador, who runs a PR firm whose job in the months leading up to war was to get pro-war voices booked into major TV and other news settings so that their voices would be amplified. But as the war was winding down, she told a story to a reporter about how she was now working for a group whose job was to plan which rogue regime would be next in line for U.S. intervention after Iraq. And she said they were saying that their agenda is to see who's next after Iraq. And she said, I went to them and I said, you can't say who's next yet. You've got to say what's next, because if you say who's next, that's a signal to everybody that you're planning another war and you don't want to alarm people. So I think it's clear that they have other countries on their list of who to topple next.
Let's go back to the phone lines for our final caller. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Sheldon Rampton and John Stauber.
Well, along with this strain, one of the most persistent claims by the administration in justifying privatizing the Iraqi oil industry is that the present state of the Iraqi economy is the result of 30 years of mismanagement by the state. Of course, until 1991, it was one of the more successful economies in the Middle East. In fact, even more successful, say, than that of the Israelis, if you take away their subsidy. Would you comment on this?
Well, you know, I think that one reason why President Clinton recently on the Larry King show came to the defense of President Bush is that the United States government, of course, under Clinton, waged a campaign against Iraq that human rights groups will tell you resulted in hundreds of thousands, I've seen some even much higher numbers, of civilian deaths because of the way the Iraqi economy was choked ostensibly to punish Hussein and weaken the regime, although it didn't seem to have much of an effect in that regard. One thing I want to say is that Sheldon and I have no lost love for Saddam Hussein. The man was clearly a brutal dictator who killed and tortured hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, and he did gas his own citizens. But the interesting thing is that many of his very worst atrocities, such as gassing his own Kurdish citizens, occurred while he was the ally of the United States and when he was being embraced by the Reagan and Bush regimes. And we also tell that story in the book. And frankly, I think most Americans don't understand that Saddam Hussein was a close ally of the United States when he perpetrated some of the atrocities that this second Bush administration now points to as justification for its attack on Iraq.
Sheldon Rampton, we only have about a minute or so left. You started talking earlier about the future and what's going to hold. I mean, today I drive around Urbana and I see many front yards with signs, support our troops. And it seems like once all these justifications for the war are gone, that's about the one that's left, just sort of a support and allegiance for the poor souls who are over there getting shot at. What do you say to someone that says, well, come on, don't you want to support the troops?
Well, I think a lot of those people would agree with me that the best way to support those troops is to get them home. About a month ago, I read a letter to the editor in an Arizona newspaper from a woman who obviously had supported the war. She began the letter by saying that the Iraqis are very selfish and ungrateful because here we've gotten rid of Saddam Hussein for them, and all they're doing is complaining that they don't have food and water. And she went, and I thought, that's really an atrocious thing to say, but she went on to say that she has a daughter, or excuse me, a niece who's in Iraq, who's doing without water herself. She only gets to take a shower every 10 days. She's had diarrhea. She's lost 15 pounds. She's sick. And the Iraqis are constantly shooting at her. And she thinks that because the Iraqis are so ungrateful, we should bring them the soldiers home now and just let the Iraqis, those ungrateful wretches, fend for themselves. So I think there's actually a growing consensus on the part of the American people that those troops ought to come home sooner rather than later. And even the people who are waving the flag and saying support our troops, I think a lot of them would agree with that.
John Stauber, closing comment?
Well, thanks, Bob, for helping us try to break through some of this media blackout on weapons of mass deception.
Well, I want to thank John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton for being my guests today on Media Matters. Their book, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, available at fine bookstores everywhere. And I'm your host, Bob McChesney, and I want to thank Brett, the engineer, and Andrea Boyle, the producer, for their help on today's show. And I'll be back in 167 hours. Thank you very much, and bye-bye, guys.